From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world, I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, time travel, teleportation, parallel universes with none other than Dr. Bruce Goldberg, and he's bringing in one of his futuristic patients, past lives. This is going to be one heck of a Coast to Coast ride tonight, so hang on. You know, we have a lot of chat rooms out there around the country, around the world that listen to Coast on a regular basis. And then all of them get together and they comment about the program, what they like, what they don't like. There's one chat room out there that has been very supportive of this program over the years called the Imaginative Worlds. And I just want to give our condolences to the family of Rick Cassidy. Rick is called Captain Beyond on that website, and he passed away in the early hours of June 24th, and we just wish the family our deepest sympathy. Captain Beyond would email me every once in a while with thoughts and ideas, and he will be missed. He will be missed. A massive foreclosure rescue bill cleared by a Senate test Tuesday by an overwhelming margin, with Democrats and Republicans both eager now to claim election year credit for helping hard-pressed homeowners. The mortgage aid plan, which led the Federal Housing Administration back about $300 billion in new cheaper home loans for an estimated 400,000 distressed borrowers who otherwise would be considered too financially risky to qualify for these government-insured fixed-rate loans. I don't know exactly when all this will go into effect, but it's supposed to help out the nearly 400,000 people who are having severe trouble. House Democrats have failed to resurrect the bill to punish price gouging at the gas pump while maneuvering to block Republican attempts to expand offshore drilling, an idea gaining in popularity amid a $4 a gallon gas price. Action on legislation that would assure continuation of the ban on oil and natural gas drilling in most of the country's coastal waters was put off until later this summer. Meanwhile, the head of OPEC, the big chief there, says oil prices will not come down. He says OPEC has done everything it can to help them come down, but they just won't come down. And that's what he says. More benefits of the spice turmeric. You've heard us on this program before talking with Kristen Wild about turmeric, a common Indian cooking spice, which plays a vital role in now combating diabetes and obesity, in addition to inflammation, according to a new study. Here he is now, Kristen Wild. I gotta compliment you, Kristen. I mean, we were miles through you ahead of the curve on this story.
So how come we didn't make any money on it?
Well, because we care more about people.
That's Kristen. Right. We didn't file a patent, George. But everybody in the world is going to be out buying more and more turmeric, and I'm happy to see it. Yeah, I did read that study. It's just one of many that are coming out. We talked about MD Anderson, the cancer center down in Texas, using tamoxifen and turmeric in combination. And, of course, we know for colon cancer, for breast cancer, for gum disease, for smoking, all of the things, including obesity, all of the things that raise high-sensitivity C-reactive protein, it is inflammation that is the killer, and we're seeing it more and more. Of course, we've talked about dementia and Alzheimer's disease. I think in the next newsletter, the next issue, I'm going to devote a lot more information not only to turmeric, but also several other natural inflammatory fighters.
Because you did have a small mention of it in your latest newsletter, which I just got.
That's true, yes. It was in regard to Alzheimer's and amyloid plaques. And there'll be much more in the next one because you keep focusing on this, George, and thank you for doing that because it is inflammation, as we continually say, that is so damaging to the body, to the organs.
Well, Kristen, you know, I get emails now from hundreds of people every time I put you on and we talk about this and some other issues. I mean, this has got to be, along with omega-3 fish oil, mm-hmm. turmeric, this has got to be one of the most inexpensive ways to help people. And you know, you sit back and you see what has happened. Mm-hmm. My God, to Tim Russett, to George Carlin. I mean, and these these situations where you're here today and you're gone tomorrow.
Life is fragile.
It really is. And this is something that's just very simple to do that could prolong your life.
That's true. If you and I went to our high school reunions, we'd find that an awful lot of people were not as fortunate as we were, and it was as a result of heart disease and other diseases that now they're starting to get a hold of. So any information we can have to be preventive, to be involved in our own health care. George, if anybody wants to still get in on the newsletter, Yes. Let me give you a little information.
Please, and a website, please.
Okay, the toll-free number, if and this is if you don't have a computer, is 866-STEM, S-T-E-M, 123. The website is www.myheartbook.com. And then the next issue, this issue right now, is bone and ligament diseases, prostate cancer, leukemias, lymphoma, liver disease, brain cancer, and updates on macular degeneration and the heart. That's the next issue, I'm sorry. And the current issue is diabetes 2, spinal injury, Alzheimer's, traumatic brain injury, kidney disease, HIV, cerebral palsy, and autism. These are the things that we've just attacked and try to present to the public all the information that we can get our hands on as to what is cutting edge and what could help them and their family members that have an interest in combating these particular catastrophic diseases.
And once again, Christian, thank you so much for bringing this information to all of us. And way ahead of the curve, my friend, way ahead. 26 members of a gang believed to be one of the nation's largest and most violent were indicted in North Carolina and charged with offenses including drug activity, racketeering, assault, and murder. A 55-count indictment was returned by a Charlotte, North Carolina grand jury. It alleges that since 2003, the members of the MS-13, you've heard Jerry Corsi talk about this group, committed 4 murders, moved drugs, and committed multiple robberies and assaults, among other crimes. This according to the Department of Justice. One of the gang's purported leaders directed activities from his El Salvador prison cell, communicating with U.S. gang members and receiving money that they wired to him. The men arrested in the slayings of an aspiring Christian singer and his colleague at a Texas recording studio said in a very chilling jailhouse interview, the victims were killed at random in a robbery that netted them only $2. They're cousins, they're both 19, and they now face capital murder charges in the deaths of singer Matthew Butler, a father of 2, and Stephen Swan, his employee, outside Butler's Christian recording studio in Texas. NASA has told the Senate panel that it anticipates losing 3,000 to 4,000 jobs at its launch site once the space shuttles stop flying in 2 more years, about half the cutback initially reported. Although as many as 6,000 to 7,000 shuttle jobs will be eliminated at the Kennedy Space Center, about 3,000 of those positions will open up again in the new exploration program. In a moment, Robert Zubrin is going to join us. We'll talk with him about that and also what's happening at the gas pump. Planet hunters say it's just a matter of time before they lasso Earth's twin, which almost surely is hiding somewhere in our star-studded galaxy. Momentum now is building. Just last week, astronomers announced that they had discovered 3 super-Earths, worlds more massive than ours but small enough to most likely be rocky, orbiting a single star. Dozens of other worlds suspected of having masses in that same range were found around other stars. Eventually, they will find many planet Earths. The world will end in 2012, or so say thousands, in the Netherlands. They're preparing for the apocalypse in 4 years. Newspapers spoke to those who believe that the 2012 date signals the impending end of civilization. And these people are stocking up on emergency supplies, equipment, life rafts in case of flooding. While theories, of course, as you know, vary as to why 2012 in particular is believed by some to represent the world's end, most say that it is merely the end of the Mayan calendar, the beginning of something enlightening. Some, however, are calling for the apocalypse, saying that they no longer want to live in the modern world. Ah, the Bee Gees. Robin Gibb has said that he and his brother Barry may return to the stage as the Bee Gees 5 years after their brother and bandmate Maurice died. Robin Gibbs says it's very open possibility that a comeback. That is, if Barry feels comfortable with it. Robin Gibb is currently preparing a release on his own new solo album. Maurice Gibb died in 2003. At that time, the brothers said they would no longer use the Bee Gees name. That is being reconsidered. A lot of people saw some kind of meteorite going over the skies in the South and the Midwest. Maybe you might have been one of those. And a shaken British soldier has said that he saw 13 UFOs spinning in the skies above his military barracks. Something major is happening there in Britain. We've got this story under Hot Stories at coasttocoastam.com. And, of course, you might remember several months ago, a pilot saw something very close when he was flying. We've got sound, finally, of this British airline pilot.
On Monday afternoon, Captain Ray Bowyer was piloting a routine passenger flight from Southampton to Alderney. But to his and the passengers' surprise, a strange object became visible on the horizon.
You've been a professional pilot for 20 years. You've flown thousands of flights. You're putting your reputation on the line here, so you must truly believe what you saw was very real.
In my years of experience, I've never seen anything like this. And frankly, I'd be perfectly happy not to ever again. It's a pretty chilling thing. And from my first sighting of it, which was initially 50 miles away, perhaps 40 miles away from the actual object, it appeared to be fairly small, but it must have been pretty huge. It must have been very, very much larger than I thought it was originally. I told air traffic control that they asked me for a size, approximately. I said about the size of a 737, perhaps twice the size. But on reflection, seeing this object from about 40 miles away, it must have been very, very much bigger than that. Perhaps, maybe a mile across, perhaps.
Were you scared?
I wasn't too happy, put it that way. I was quite glad to get on the ground and have a cup of tea.
Now, what's particularly interesting about this case is that not only did you see it, but your passengers saw it, and indeed radar picked it up. Can you tell me about that?
As I understand it, there was a plot taken on the Jersey radar to be a couple of miles south of the Caskets Lighthouse. And another aircraft also flying in the vicinity from the Isle of Man into Guernsey, I believe, saw a similar sort of thing.
Jersey Air Traffic Control confirmed their radar picked up some activity in the area, but say the data can't be taken as evidence of a UFO's presence.
Isn't that something? Something is going over the United Kingdom. In a moment, Robert Zubrin joins us to talk about all these possible lost jobs for NASA and also lost money in your pocket because of these gasoline prices. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And here he is now, Robert Zubrin, of course. He's got a couple websites, MarsSociety.org, EnergyVictory.net. Here he is, Robert. NASA looks like we're going to lose 3,000 to 4,000 jobs in a time we really don't want to really lose these jobs. What are they going to do to try to fix that?
Well, they're not going to fix it. They're going to lose those 3,000 to 4,000 jobs, and they may lose more. The reason why they cut the job loss from the previous estimate of about 7,000 to about half that is because they anticipate picking up jobs with the exploration program, that is the Moon-Mars program, beginning to come on as the shuttle program shuts down, and it will replace about half the jobs lost. However, there's every possibility that the new president, McCain or Obama, might not elect to do the Moon Mars program, in which case 7,000 jobs will be lost.
And where will these people with these kinds of specialties, the expertise that they have, Robert, where will they go to work? What can they do?
They'll find jobs here or there, you know, selling, you know, cable TV subscriptions and, you know, cell phone plans and whatever. The issue is, I mean, it's unfortunate for them, but it's a disaster for the nation to lose this kind of technical capability, to allow these teams to be frittered off into, you know, just various jobs here and there. I mean, these people will probably find a way to find work. They're smart people, but they won't be part of crack technical teams anymore. They won't really be offering the nation what they have to offer.
And 3,000 to 7,000 jobs, Robert, in a small area in Florida. I got to believe that these people have been very important to the local economy down there.
Yeah, that's right. For every two of them that are lost, three additional local jobs will be lost. So, for instance, if we lose 6,000 of them, then there'll be another 9,000 people who, you know, working in stores and so forth, who lose their jobs too.
What's going on with the EnergyVictory.net group?
Well, a lot. Okay. On Thursday, Senator Brownback is going to introduce a bill to make it the law that all new cars sold in the United States need to be flex-fueled.
Excellent.
That's made, not sold. This is the key thing to break OPEC. If this bill passes, we've got a chance. If it doesn't, we're going to get destroyed in this country. They're destroying us now. You know, with the oil prices hitting $140 a barrel this year, the United States is going to pay $700 billion for foreign oil.
And this is being pushed too, Robert, isn't it? They're pushing this up. There's something going on here.
Oh, sure. They're pushing it up. This is OPEC policy. It's OPEC policy to destroy the West. You know,
even though OPEC says, hey, look, we've increased production, we've done everything we can, it's not our fault.
They haven't increased production. That's a lie, okay? Here's the truth. Between 1973 and today, the world economy doubled in size, and non-OPEC oil production doubled in size to match. But OPEC oil production, while it's had wild ups and downs as they turn the taps on and off to manipulate the market, overall it stayed the same. They're producing no more oil than they were a third of a century ago, despite the fact that their market has doubled, despite the fact that they're sitting on top of 80% of the world's oil reserves, including all the easiest-to-drill stuff. So what OPEC is like, it's like a cruel dog owner that puts a collar nice and snug around the neck of a puppy and leaves it set there without letting it out while the dog grows. So the collar gets tighter and tighter and tighter until it chokes the dog to death. That is what they are doing to the world economy right now. Between 1945 and 1973, you know, the previous third of a century, when the oil production of the OPEC countries was under the control of the international oil companies, the oil production of OPEC during that period went up 10 times. It went up from a few million barrels a day to 30 million barrels a day. Okay, but as soon as they nationalized the oil wells and took everything over, they switched the policy. They were no longer concerned with the well-being of their customers, quite the opposite. The very first thing they did was try an oil embargo to try to wreck our economies.
Sure.
And that only ended because they ran out of money. They had limited financial reserves. Now they have huge financial reserves, and furthermore, we're not 30% dependent on foreign oil like we were in 73. Now, because of the failure of our politicians, we're 60% dependent on foreign oil. So we've doubled our dependency while the other side has built up a multi-trillion-dollar strike fund. The politicians of this country who have acted completely feckless on this issue have exposed this country to a disaster waiting to happen.
Robert, I've been getting emails from people who have been witnessing via the internet a company in India that, you know, is making this little $2,500 car, and apparently now they're making a car that works and runs on compressed air. I don't know if that's going to work or not, but it is a neat-looking little gadget.
Well, a compressed air car is not really practical. You can use one to drive around the factory, but they have very limited range. So that's not really the answer. Small cars that get improved mileage with ordinary engines are, of course, are advantageous under conditions of high gas prices, but they won't beat OPEC. The way we need to beat OPEC is to destroy their monopoly on the world vehicle fuel supply.
And it's got to be done immediately. Robert, we're going to take this break. I'm keeping you for the hour. We're also going to open up the phone lines as well to give you an opportunity to talk with Robert Zubrin about gasoline prices and also space. You've got a dual person here. He's next on Coast to Coast AM. And we have Robert Zubrin this hour as we talk about things in space and also gasoline prices and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Robert. There's got to be some other groups behind the OPEC group that it also is pushing this price, don't you think?
Well, OPEC is the chief one, and of course, at the core of that is Saudi Arabia and the Saudi royal family. These people are Wahhabis, which is an extremely intolerant version of Islam that requires essentially the death or enslavement of non-Wahhabis, and that emphatically includes Christians, Jews, Hindus, Taoists, Buddhists, secularists, animists, and so forth. It means us. And they've got the weapon in their hands to do it. They do terrorism, but that, in fact, is not their best weapon. Their best weapon is the oil itself. Saudi's not going to conquer the United States by crashing airplanes into skyscrapers. They could crash every airplane in the world into American buildings, and when the bombardment was over, the Republic would still stand. But what they're doing right now, I mean, this year OPEC is going to clear $1.5 trillion in net export earnings profits.
And they're using that to buy things in a distressed economic climate right now.
Exactly. And, just think about this for a second. The entire worth of the U.S. Fortune 500 is $18 trillion. So at $1.5 trillion a year, it takes 6 years to get $9 trillion, which is enough to buy majority control of the entire Fortune 500. And they can even probably buy it cheaper because as they push us into recession, mm-hmm. the company's values is going to go down. The Saudis have put together a $900 billion takeover fund. It's called a sovereign wealth fund. Several other OPEC countries have put together takeover funds in the $100 billion class. So, you know, look, they're already starting the takeover. A Saudi prince bought 5.6% of the Wall Street Journal. So this is why the Wall Street Journal won't say print a single true article about ethanol or other alternate fuels. They try to shut that down. They're trying to protect the oil cartel because they're partly Saudi-owned.
Trying to protect their own jobs.
Yeah, well, they're protecting their own jobs. What they're doing is they're corrupting the political discourse within the United States. The things people are seeing in the press, the whole political discussion goes completely haywire because these guys are all over the place. Let me give you another example. Patton Boggs is the largest lobbying firm in Washington, D.C., the biggest. They've got 400 attorneys on staff. They are now registered with the United States Department of Justice as official agents of influence of the Saudi Arabian government. They get millions and millions of dollars from the Saudis, and then they send their attorneys running around Capitol Hill to try to influence practically every piece of legislation that goes out, and also foreign policy. So, and this is public. Then, besides guys like this who are officially Saudi agents, they've got hundreds of them that they're paying who don't register with the Justice Department, who are under the cover. Paid agents of influence, and they're bribing members of the government. You know, Colin Powell, a week after he retired as Secretary of State, Prince Bandar, the Saudi ambassador, shows up at the front door with a new Jaguar to give him. Okay, a Jaguar. Now, let me tell you, I run a...
Did he take it?
Oh, yes.
He did.
And now this was a legal gift because Mr. Powell had retired for a full week from government service.
Right.
So he was not giving a gift to a U.S. government employee. He was giving it to him after he
left. Private citizen.
That's right, just a private citizen. But as Prince Bandar explained to the Washington Post, when the word gets around how good the Saudis can be to their friends after they leave office, you'd be amazed how much more friendly they can be while they're in office. And they all know
good
it.
Point.
Now, Colin Powell, he earned that Jaguar. He really did, because during his period of time as Secretary of State, the oil price tripled, and he did nothing about that. He did nothing to confront OPEC or Saudi Arabia. He did nothing to confront the Saudis over their funding of terrorism and their urging of Saudi citizens to go to Iraq to kill American soldiers.
See, this is what I don't understand, though. I mean, we've seen the price explode over the last year. Explode.
Right? That's right.
I don't see OPEC. I would assume general economics would tell you that if you have a slower production of oil, the price is going to go up. I haven't seen that. I see them still coming out with more barrels of oil.
No, they took 2 million barrels of oil off the world market at the same time that the demand is increasing in China and India. See, that's another thing. Going back to that analogy I gave you about the dog growing while the collar is set tight.
And I like that analogy.
Okay. See, it's not the growth of the dog that kills the dog. Dogs are expected to grow. Okay, it is the collar around its neck that kills the dog.
Which isn't supposed to be around his neck.
Right. So right now, for example, people come along and say, well, it's growing demand from China and India that is causing the prices to go up. Well, it's true there is growing demand from China and India, but demand was growing worldwide much faster between 1945 and 1973 with the rebuilding of Europe and the U.S. post-war economic boom and the rebuilding of Japan. There's no comparison. The worldwide economic growth rates were 6% during that period. But oil production expanded to match. But as soon as these characters, the Saudis and their pals, took over the control of the oil wells that had been built for them by British and American oil companies, they changed the policy because they did not have the attitude. You know, like, you know, you take a utility, they watch how much electricity the customer needs, and if they sense that the demand is going up, they build a new plant. Okay? They don't say, nope, sorry.
And they also suggest that you go on a specialized budget plan that they send you via computer.
Right. But they try to meet the needs of their customer. And this was, I mean, the Seven Sisters were hardly sin-free organizations, but they basically had the attitude that the economies of the industrial world were their customers and they had to provide enough oil to meet the needs of the customer. The attitude of the OPEC is the industrial world is their enemy, okay? And they don't care about our well-being, let alone the well-being of the third world, which, you know, when they rig up the price of oil, it sends us into recession. It sends Africa into starvation.
Let's go to some phones, Bob. Wildcard line, Bob in L.A. You're on with Bob Zubrin. Go ahead.
Hey, another Bob. This Bob's from L.A. George, how's it going?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, right now what I'm looking at, I work in investigative business, and what I see right now is really interesting. Now, you have to think about it, World War II for a second. Why did Hitler lose World War II? Why did the Germans fall apart?
They didn't have the gasoline.
They didn't have the gas. They ran out of gas. Let's say you wanted to start World War III and you wanted to stack the deck in your favor. Wouldn't it be in your best interest to make sure that you controlled all the oil and made sure you had the keys and all the friends to shut down your enemy's oil supply? So I think someone stacking the deck for World War III and making sure that whoever, us and the Saudis and other countries, our other allies, win World War III.
Well, that's a good point. What about the possibility, Bob, of an Israeli attack on Iran's nuclear plant, which could shut down their oil production if it escalates? And people are speculating on that, and the price is going up, too. Is that possible?
It's entirely possible. At some point, if people continue to do nothing about Iran's nuclear program, the Israelis will have to.
I think that could be sooner than later, by the way.
It could be sooner than later, and in fact, probably the best, if you want to shut down the Iranian nuclear program, the best way to do it, actually, is not to try to strike the nuclear facilities, which are deeply dug in, but to strike Karg Island, which is the Iranian oil export facility, exports 80% of Iran's oil. That would be easy to hit, thin-walled oil tanks, few bombs, set the whole place on fire, that's it. Iran's kaput. They have no oil exports, they have no money, which means they have no nuclear program, but it'll take 2 million barrels of oil a day off the world market. There's all sorts of other possibilities because, you know, I mean, this place is basically a powder keg filled with all kinds of radical factions who have their own ideas. You know, Al-Qaeda, even though they're being funded by the Saudis, tried to blow up the Saudi oil export terminal in February 2006. Why? Because it would collapse Western civilization. Okay, if they took out Abiquaque, take 8 million barrels a day off the world market, the price of oil would shoot up to $300 a barrel overnight. You'd have a worldwide depression. I mean, depression, not recession, depression. 30% unemployment, that kind of thing, okay? Total chaos in the U.S., Europe, Japan, the whole industrial world, okay? That is what they were aiming to do, and they were only stopped from doing it
by the fact that one security guard was on his toes and he got off a shot and stopped the truck bomb within 100 yards of its target. If that guy had missed the shot or the gun had jammed or if they had shot him first, the whole world would have gone off the skids. So that's another reason why, aside from the fact that these people have the capacity to shut off our oil on purpose, the oil could be shut off, in a sense, by accident because of all these crazy people and random actors that are running around in the Middle East. It's not even, you know, the Saudis have been turning out these Frankenstein monsters in the form of terrorists, but once you produce a terrorist, the terrorist has a mind of his own and he can do anything, okay? So, you know, I mean, this is just crazy for us to remain dependent on them. Now, the key thing is to have cars that are not addicted to their product. You see, you know, all these people run around saying we're addicted to oil. We're not addicted to oil. It's our cars that are addicted to oil. Our cars are kind of like a person that can only eat one food, like herring, okay? So if the herring merchants want to charge him $100 a pound, he has to buy it. There's nothing he can do. You're much better off being a normal person who could eat steak and ice cream and cantaloupes and bread and corn and potatoes and anything you like, okay? Then if somebody wants to charge you $100 for herring, you say, go away, and that's it. So if we make it the law that all new cars sold in the United States need to be flex-fueled, that is able to run equally well on alcohol or gasoline, the alcohol including both methanol and ethanol, okay, that becomes the international standard. Hundreds of millions of cars worldwide will be flex-fueled. Gasoline will be forced to compete at the pump against both methanol and ethanol made in any which way all over the world, not just in the United States, but all over the world. See, if you make the world auto fleet compatible with alternate fuels, in particular methanol, which can be made from any kind of biomass without exception, as well as from coal, natural gas, and even recycled trash, okay, if you do that, then practically every country in the world has a way to make fuel. And so it's not just that we become energy independent, everybody becomes energy independent. And OPEC's power is totally broken. That's what we need to do. That's what this Brownback Open Fuel Standards Bill will do. So that's one thing everybody listening to this show needs to do is call up the office of their two senators and also their congressmen and ask them to become co-sponsors of the Open Fuel Standards Act.
East of the Rockies, Bill in Toronto, you're up with us. Hi, Bill.
Hi, George. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I hope at some point Richard C. Hoagland will come on with you, Robert, to discuss the advent of this thin film solar cell technesis, but that's another time. I'd like to get into John Thune's Flex Fuel for All Americans Act, but I'm concerned about one aspect, well, actually two. One is if we're going to go this route of demanding that cars be retrofitted, surely we can't continue to allow the use of food grains to be used in order to get our ethanol, methanol, whatever we need. And we've got to wipe out, I think, this demand for 52 cents on the gallon of oil for a mixing fee. I mean, this Carlyle Group, this ADM Corporation, this is all nonsense, and none of this should have been accepted in the first place. I think Brazil's got it on track by saying, let's go this way, and they've gone this way this year. But there is some concerns about not joining at the hip, a requirement that we don't go in the direction of increasing this scare concerning the increase in food costs because we're using this stuff for other than food. And so let's go subterranean, tiered subterranean agronomy and agriculture and hyper-terranean agriculture and agronomy, and so that you can use these alternative substances and products and don't use the land that you're using for food grains to be used for the alternatives.
Your reaction, Bob?
Okay, couple things. Number one, the bill is not to mandate retrofits of existing cars to flex fuel. The bill is to make sure that every new car is made a flex fuel car so that no new cars are made that does not give the consumer fuel choice. Now, we should set up certification programs so that some of these kits that people are starting to market right now to convert existing cars to flex fuel cars so they can be certified and people can know they're reliable, but that should be a voluntary conversion that people do if they want to do. The key thing, because it's more expensive to convert an existing car to flex fuel than just to make, if you just make it flex fuel in the first place, it only adds $100 to the cost of the car. It's going to be the less the cost of one fill up pretty soon to do that. So that's what the bill is. Now, as far as There's been misinformation put out by the oil cartel that the biofuel program is the thing running up the price of food. That's simply untrue. In fact, U.S. corn exports in 2007 were the largest in history, and U.S. farm exports overall in 2007 were the largest in history. So the biofuel program has not reduced our farm exports. It has not reduced the total available grain product at all. The food riots in Haiti were about rice. Prices, no one is converting rice paddies to cornfields. The thing that is driving up food prices internationally is not a shortage of production from the U.S. U.S. production has been expanding. That will be down this year because of these floods, but that has nothing to do with the biofuel program. The thing that's driving up food prices, the biggest single factor, are fuel prices. It's the action of the oil cartel itself. Fuel prices feed into all kinds of things that are done in agriculture, the price of fertilizer, the pipe of pump fuel, farm equipment fuel, the fuel needed to transport the grains to market and to process it and so forth. Then you also have speculation with the petrodollars themselves. Yes, the Carlyle Group, which is a Saudi-run group, has been speculating on the grain exchanges and running up the price of grains. Okay, that's a speculative action. And then there is one real factor that has caused some increase in food prices, and that's increased demand from China and India. But the it's certainly not the biofuel program. There are 1,600 million acres of arable land in the United States. 17 million acres, a little more than 1%, was used to grow ethanol last year.
That's amazing. All right, let's take one or two more calls. West of the Rockies, Sergio in Reno. Go ahead, Sergio.
Good evening, George. And I just want to make a comment to your guest there. In a way, I agree with him that OPEC is putting pressure on the U.S. by raising the fuel prices, but we have no one to blame but ourselves. We use this ridiculous cars. They get very little, 5, 6, 10 miles to the gallon. Our military uses 60% of the oil in this country. And we're like children in a candy shop. And mommy decided to take our candy away, and now we're crying because we can't get all the candy we want. And it's ridiculous. Yeah, they're to blame, but we have a big, part of the blame.
All right, let's get your reaction to that as we have a minute left, Robert.
We're to blame only in the sense that we've allowed ourselves to remain dependent on these people. That's the key thing. The key thing is not to be guilty about using fuel. The key thing is to be angry about the fact that our politicians, who we counted on to provide leadership for national security, did not do so, and they allowed our dependence to double. But we can break this dependence right now simply by passing a bill requiring that every car sold in the country give people fuel choice. The policy is laid out at length in my book, Energy Victory. People can get the book on Amazon. I also have a website, energyvictory.net, where we lay out the whole policy on how to destroy the oil cartel, take away the funding from the terrorists, and redirect trillions of dollars a year that's now going to the oil cartel to the world agricultural sector instead, so that countries like in Africa and South America that are now being bled dry by these Saudis, these other petro tyrants, they can make their own fuel and they could export fuel to the U.S. and Europe and Japan. They get a piece of the action of the world fuel business. And so instead of us selling control of our banks and corporations and media organizations to Saudi princes, we could be selling tractors to Africa. That's how the world should be. That's the kind of world we can make. We just need to demand responsible leadership from our politicians. We have to demand that they act on behalf of America, not on behalf of Saudi Arabia.
EnergyVictory.net is Robert's website. I want to go there and read up on his work. I'd name you our energy czar if I had my choice, Robert. And I'll be back with Dr. Bruce Goldberg, Time Travelers from Our Future, next on Coast to Coast AM.